98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. NFL analyst Mark Schlereth talks football with Bickley and Murata. Brought to you by Earnhardt Ford in Chandler, proud sponsor of the Arizona Cardinals. No bull.
It is that time of the week. Mark Schlereth joins us here on Bickley and Murata to talk football. Stink, how are you today, man?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Doing well. We'll just jump right in because we've been having this discussion today with the Cardinals still searching for a quote-unquote offensive coordinator. How important is that position in your mind, just generally speaking, when you have an offensive-minded head coach who will be calling the plays? And I guess on the flip side of that, how attractive is an opening like that around the league when you don't have play-calling duties attached to that job description?
Well, I mean, obviously, I think as a coordinator, you'd much rather have the play calling duties. Mm-hmm. You're still going to be one of those guys that's going to be in charge of game planning and putting things in, installation of the game plan, helping put the game plan together. So, I mean, obviously, having being appointed or being empowered to be the coordinator, always one of those situations in the NFL, especially if you have some success as an offense. Because, I mean, let's face it, you have success as an offense, if you're a young coordinator, you're with a young coach, and that's what people covet right now. So, you know, from an attractiveness standpoint, I think that part's attractive. I think if you looked at the roster right now, that might, you know, might make you take a step back a little bit and go, man, I hope I get another opportunity instead of just this one opportunity. But there's only 32 offensive coordinators in the National Football League. So if you get that opportunity, you have nowhere else to go. Obviously, you're going to take it.
All right, Mark, I want to ask you about this, because now that the Cardinals have sort of revamped their coaching staff, we're hearing this great excitement for all these assistants they've hired, just like we did under Steve Wilks, and it all gets down to the players, and we know that. But as offensive coach, offensive line coach, what do you know, what do you think you know about Sean Coogler?
Well, I mean, Sean, you know, came into Denver. I don't know a ton. I mean, I know Sean, I've talked to Sean. No nonsense guy. I think they were pretty happy with some of the development and some of the growth potential. I mean, a lot of problems in Denver, the same problems you dealt with in Arizona, with a lack of efficiency with the offensive line, a lack of just flat out lack of talent. And I think he got a lot out of the talent that he was given. They weren't great up front, but they made strides. They played better as the season went on. And I think they did a pretty good job considering the fact that, like I said, I think they were challenged athletically. So that's what I know about Sean Coogler. Yeah. You know, not a ton, but I think here in Denver, he took pretty average at best talent, maybe below average talent, and actually got them to play pretty, you know, pretty decent football. Not great, but decent football. Decent. At least give them a chance to compete in the running game.
Well, it seems like the Cardinals are hell-bent on hiring a lot of ex-Broncos coaches. I don't know if you endorse that strategy or not, Mark.
Well, listen, I you know, obviously, the thing about coaching, especially that position, and I think it's more and more, you know, it's so interesting to watch the last collective bargaining agreement and to watch you negotiate practice time, you know, out of that. And I could go on for an hour about all the mistakes made in the last collective bargaining agreement. But the bottom line is this: to me, it's about player development, and it's about teaching nuance with limited practice time. You know, it's one thing for a guy to tell you, hey, you got to stay low. It's another thing for a guy to be able to show you, to be able to diagram it, to be able to talk about, you know, the footwork and the hand placement and the bend that you have to have and you know, striking guys from a low to high plane to create leverage. That's a whole different thing. And just to be able to say, hey, man, you got to block this guy, it's one thing to tell you how to block him, another thing to show you how. And that's what I think a lot of times that's what's missing in the NFL. Just because you coach in the NFL doesn't mean you know anything. Doesn't mean you're any good at it. There's plenty of horrible coaches in the National Football League that have survived for a long time.
Yes.
So, you know, and you've witnessed it. So, I mean, it just is, it's the nature of the beast. It really, to me, is about teaching and developing guys. And there's a reason, you know, every year, what is this, 8 straight years of the Patriots have been in the AFC Championship game.
Yeah.
And it's not just because of Tom Brady. It's a big reason, yes. But they have guys that they develop over the course of time that you don't know who their names are. And all of a sudden you're like, damn, that guy's a pretty good player. That guy's a pretty good player. And it's about the development. Their coach is developing those players and making them good NFL players.
Mark Schlereth, our weekly NFL guest here on Bickley and Murata. And we'll move off the coaching thing and get to the playoffs and what's going on around the league. But last thing, since we last spoke, we had our discussion about Cliff Kingsbury last week. In that time, obviously, the Cardinals have hired Vance Joseph, a guy that we've had many discussions about with you during the course of this season. Didn't work out as a head coach. What are your thoughts on Vance Joseph as a defensive mind and in this coordinator spot for the Cardinals?
Well, you know, I think it probably fits right now at this point in his career. I think it just fits better. And I think, you know, I always say this about hiring a head coach. Even if the guy isn't the greatest X's and O's guy or whatever, I think the one thing you have to be able to do is command your audience, whether it's one-on-one with a player, whether it's the entire team meeting, whether it's your coach, one coach, or your entire coaching staff or the media. When you can command the audience, you have a certain you build a certain rapport with those people, but you also have a certain, you know, gravitas, if you will, when you actually speak to people, your ability to communicate, to get your message across. You know, as an assistant coach, you don't have to have that. What you have to do is be able to connect with your players. And I think Vance has that. I mean, anybody you talk to that Vance coached, they've loved Vance. They loved playing for him. They loved his ability to communicate with them on a football field. I just don't think it necessarily resonated as a head coach very well. And, you know, and I think you learn your mistakes along the way, but, and, you know, the next opportunity, if you get another opportunity, you'll probably be way better off for it. But from what I understand and from the guys that I know that have played for Vance, they really enjoy Vance and they'll play hard for Vance. And, yeah, you know, I think sometimes, you know, sometimes, I mean, I played for Norv Turner as a head coach. He's been a tremendous offensive coordinator throughout his career, but as a head coach, his first go around, it was a struggle for him. And,
yep,
and there's just a different dynamic there.
Dave Wannstedt was the same way. There's a lot of guys like that who fit that mold. All right, I'm curious, what are your reactions? And we've talked a lot about Cliff Kingsbury and where the league is going, the copycat league. The Cardinals now are allegedly trying to build a playbook that incorporates all of Cliff Kingsbury's innovation with traditional NFL running game stuff. Can those two mix? And if so, why hasn't it happened, or why haven't some team tried to do that before?
Well, I think they all try to do it. You know, they all come in with the whole innovation game. And I mean, here's the thing, guys. I talked to two general managers just last week. End of last week. Talked to two general managers about this topic in general, just about how innovation happens. And I can take my iPad, and I have through an NFL team, I have what the NFL coaches and the NFL organizations use. Mm-hmm. And so I can take, you could say, okay, Stink, give me every 3-by-1 formation out of 3-wide personnel that happened in week 15. And I can plug that into my iPad and I'll collate all that information in 30 seconds. And I'll have every team's 11 personnel, 3-by-1 formations, and each defense, how they defended it. Mm-hmm. I can do it in 30 seconds. So what used to take you 3 days to put together, you can collate that in 30 seconds. So you tell me how much innovation you think is going on in the National Football League when everybody has access to that and everybody steals everybody's play.
Great point.
Yeah, honestly, how much innovation goes on? Everybody runs the same crap. I do games. I spend 50 hours a week prepping games. There's not one team that doesn't get a 3-by-1 formation out of 3-wide personnel and run an all-go special. Everybody runs it. 100% of the league runs all-go special out of that personnel grouping and that formation. Uh-huh. So you tell me how much innovation. Where it really comes down to is how well does my running game sync up with my play-action stuff, and how many deceptives can I get out of that? The teams that are really good, their running game matches identically to their play-action game. And what you see is you see a lot of teams who run play-action stuff, but it looks nothing like their running game. So from an innovation standpoint, it's really, can I match up an NFL running game, and does my play-action stuff mesh with my running game? And that's really where innovation comes through. I mean, the innovation stuff is, okay, if we run this route, how do we adjust based on based on their personnel, who can we attack? And then the other thing is, if I see it in-game, and I think this is the big difference, the coaches who see it in-game, they can see and go, okay, this is how they're playing us. They're in a too-high safety look, but on the out route, if we run a flat sail combination, that safety tries to undercut the sail. So can we run sail and go? And do we adjust that? We get in the same formation, we get the same look, and then we hit them with a little bit different route combination. Mm-hmm. There's innovation for you. But it's not like all of a sudden you're coming up with a new play that nobody has ever seen before, and you're like, oh, my God, the guy's a genius. Genius and football are mutually exclusive events. No, that's not the big – you got think about this now. From the time I was 15, I gorged myself till I was 300 pounds, right? I mean, I used to wake up at night and eat ice cream and candy bars, right, so I could be heavy enough to play. And then I put a real thin piece of plastic on my head and smash it into other people. It's not genius, guys. It's stupidity. You're not coaching in the NFL. You're not playing in the NFL if you're a freaking genius. It's just they're mutually exclusive events, so let's quit trying to make it more complicated than it really is.
Yeah. Mark Schlereth, our weekly NFL guest, NFL on Fox 104.3, The Fan in Denver. Shifting to the playoffs, my biggest takeaway from the first weekend, the wild card weekend, Mark, was what the Chargers defense was able to do to shut down Lamar Jackson in Baltimore. Very impressive. My biggest takeaway from weekend two of the playoffs was what Josh McDaniels and the Patriots offense did to that very same Chargers defense. I mean, when you can shift like that and kind of shape shift from week to week, I mean, I know people want to throw dirt on the Patriots coffin, but they're really scary because they can do that better than anybody, in my opinion. Do you agree?
Oh, yeah, I do. I mean, obviously, Tom Brady is Tom Brady for a reason. What is it, 8 straight AFC championship games he's played in now? I mean, that's borderline ridiculous, but you give him the answers to the test. You know, if you think, you know, you're the Chargers and you're Gus Bradley and, hey, we're really good because we've got great personnel. We just do what we do. Good luck, right? We're going to play – like, I look back, and this was my key to the game last week. I was like, you know, when you look at the Patriots versus the Chargers in 2017, it was a 21-13 victory. The Patriots, I believe, went to Carson, California – to take on the Chargers, and their running backs had 14 receptions for like 168 yards. And when you play a base cover three, because that's what they base out of, here's what ends up happening to you in that cover three. If I run both my corners off, right, that becomes a man-to-man matchup. So if I run two wide receivers on goes, that's a man-to-man matchup. They have to run with that, all right? So that zone becomes a matchup man. It's a matchup zone concept, right? So I run them in that deep third. Those corners have to go and cover that. That's their responsibility. Now all of a sudden, the outside linebacker and whoever's a buzz safety, the guy that walks up, right, the in-the-box safety, those two guys' responsibility is curl the flat. So they have to get 12 yards of depth in the curl, and now all of a sudden I throw the flat to the running back. They've got to rally up and make that tackle. Now, if they're great, they can rally up and make that tackle for 2 yards. You're in second down and 8, and you're behind the chains. But if they don't rally up quick enough or they miss a tackle, that's, you know, second down and 2, second down and 1 that I'm in. James White had 15 catches in that game. So if you think you're going to line up and say, hey, we've got good enough athletes and we're just going to play what we play against Tom Brady, then, you know, again, that there's this, the genius and football mutually exclusive events. Like, if you do that, you're going to get eviscerated. And, you know, they're going to play zone. That's what they do. And you know, they paid the ultimate price because they just got their ass kicked playing that way. So with Tom Brady, you got to take your chances. You've got to constantly change it up. Eric Mangini, when he went to the Jets and he went to Cleveland to play Tom Brady, he won a couple of those games. And they had a first-half game plan and a second-half defensive game plan. And it completely changed everything. They changed the looks. They changed the fronts. They changed the coverages. And then they came in at halftime and scrap piled what they did in the first half and had success with and came out with a completely different defense in the second half. And that's how they attacked Tom Brady. So he's played that long. Like he says, I have the answers to the test. So yeah.
Yep.
You better do something to try to at least slow him down.
All right, last question. I'm sure you've seen the weather forecast for Kansas City. Brutal Arctic cold, and you're going to get guys saying the right thing. Bill Belichick's all right. We don't care. We'll play anywhere. Guys will be wearing, you know, bare arms on the field to show their toughness. What is the reality of a football player playing in extreme cold like that, and how many guys are just thinking about getting on that bus and just getting someplace warm?
Well, you know, I mean, I think that, one, it's cold. It's cold for everybody. You realize that. When you're playing, when you're in the game, once you start playing, it's a football game. Like, you stay pretty warm. You know, you roll the sideline, you put a coat on, and you sit on that heated bench, and you put your helmet on top of the little heated, you know, they got the little heaters things. You guys don't have them in Arizona, but they have these little heater things, and they're great. Because they warm your helmet up, it's like putting on. It's like literally, it's like slipping a warm biscuit over your head. You know, you take the biscuit out of the oven and it's all hot, and you put a little butter on it, and it melts all over the place, and you're like, "This is the best biscuit I've ever eaten, and it's the greatest thing in the world." That's what your helmet hanging on that thing is like. It's like a warm biscuit over your head,
That's
and
awesome.
It feels so good when you put it on. Yeah, and so anyhow, you stay warm. Now, I would hate to be a backup player in those conditions, because they just must be miserable. Those son of a guns got to be miserable in those conditions. It's cold. It's nasty. I actually was playing in Green Bay in a game like that once, and I broke my helmet. And so my helmet is like broke. I can't buckle the chin. I mean, I broke it. I broke the face mask. It's kind of dangling.
Uh-huh.
So without missing a play, I take my helmet off. I chuck it to the sideline, and one of the backup players throws me his helmet. Well, I don't have a real big head. I kind of have a peanut head. Like, I have a certain head to body weight ratio that,
yeah.
Like, there's a certain, when you get to a weight, like, there's a certain, if you lose too much weight, your head looks way too big.
Yep.
Like, I gained a lot of weight. I was so big, my head looked like this little tiny peanut on top of my shoulders. Well, he throws me his helmet. It's, first off, it's like a bobblehead helmet, right? And the thing is frozen solid. I mean, it is like putting an ice cube, not a warm muffin. It's an ice cube on top of my head. And so I had to, you know, they're fixing my helmet. I had to wear it for like two plays, and I like didn't want to bust a grape. I didn't want to hit anybody. Like,
oh,
I was like, please,
yeah,
call a play where I can run out and not touch anybody. miserable. So it's playing in the cold is miserable, but you just have to deal with it. Everybody has to play in that.
Mark, always appreciate the time and the insight. Thanks, man. We'll do it again next week.
Anytime.
All right.
You, bud.
Mark Schlereth, NFL at Fox 104.3, The Fan in Denver. Our guest, as he is weekly here on Pickley and Marotta, warm biscuit over the head. Some coaching news, according to Tom Pelissero of NFL Network. Cardinals, I'll just read the tweet to you that came out earlier today. This is interesting. Cardinals interviewed longtime NFL assistant Tom Clements for their OC job yesterday. Sources say has coached a handful of Pro Bowl quarterbacks, played the position, worked closely with Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay. Another mentor for Rodgers' pal, Josh Rosen. Question mark. Ian Rappaport followed that up and
said,
"Yeah,
that's the kind of guy the Cardinals need to hire.
Even if the Clements doesn't get the OC job, he could end up with another position on the offensive staff." Tom Clements, if you're unfamiliar, couple of stints as an offensive coordinator in the NFL, 2004-2005 with Buffalo.
He played at Notre Dame way back in the day, didn't he?
Yeah, 2012 to 2014 with the Packers, assistant head coach with the Packers in 2015-2016, and a longtime CFL quarterback.
Oh, that's what you want?
Yeah.
Somebody who's coached a different game with different specifications.
Look.
That's what you want?
He hit for the Canadian Football League cycle.
Which is what?
He started his career as a player with the Ottawa Rough Riders,
mm-hmm,
from 75 to 78. And then in 79, he became a Saskatchewan Rough Rider.
Wow.
He played for both of the Rough Riders. Although there's only one now. Ottawa renamed themselves.
I can't believe there was two at one point in time. Man, is that lazy.
The SEC has three Tigers and two Bulldogs.
Yeah, good point.
Apropos of nothing, that's been a long joke about the Canadian Football League, because they had like eight teams and two of them were named the Rough Riders. Have you seen the rosters for like the Chinese basketball, or the team names for the Chinese Basketball League?
Have I?
I can't believe you would even ask me that. The Chinese Basketball League.
I'm pulling this up.
As if I don't have enough stuff to pay attention to.
Team names. Here we go. There's maybe I'm looking at the wrong. No, they're all Tigers, basically. There's the Jilin GBT Northeast Tigers, the Zhangjiang bank flying Tigers. There's the Southern Tigers. Canadian Football League got a bad rap for a long time. That's
okay.
All I'm saying.
I gotcha.
Yeah, but to your point, Tom Clements, experienced guy. He is older. Again, I don't think it's necessarily a knock to say the offensive coordinator position is not that big of a hire.
It's not.
The offensive line position is a bigger hire.
Why are they interviewing?
The offensive coordinator position is a bigger hire.
Why are they interviewing so many people then if it's not an important hire?
Somebody's got to take the job.
Well, it's back to what I said earlier. Then why are you spending your time interviewing a Steve Sarkisian or particularly a John DeFilippo, who as an offensive coordinator is going to cost you a lot of money, regardless of what you have him do? He's not going to be a minimum wage by NFL standards kind of guy. So are you just doing it so people don't get, man, the Cardinals, look at what they're doing. It just it kind of speaks to the PR of this whole process. You know what I mean? Hey, we interviewed all these guys, but the job's not, you know.
Yeah, but
you're sending one message by bringing in all these guys and then another by, the job isn't that big. We don't need one.
All these other teams follow that model, but because there's more proven commodities at the head coach,
yep,
it's not an issue.
Yeah.
It's only an issue here because of Cliff Kingsbury's lack of NFL experience. And the thought that he's really got to lean on his coordinator for everything not quarterback related.
At this point in time, you got to let your freak flag fly. You do. Look, we hired Cliff Kingsbury. We're out of our minds. We're trying something completely different. We're not going to bother with an offensive coordinator. Sue us. That kind of thing. You know what I mean? Just own it fully.
Yeah. We'll keep you updated on anything that may break with the Cardinals coaching staff as it happens here on Bickley Murata.
Hire Kurt Warner as just a consultant.
He said at the time he'd be open for some consulting job. He doesn't want the everyday grind.
Last thing the
NFL
Cardinals
coach.
Want is Kurt Warner to get more of the credit. Ken Wisenhunt struggled with that. Huh? Not enough people are giving me props.
Yeah, he's not here.
Well,
anymore.
That would be Ken because your quarterback took you to the Super Bowl. That would be why.
No, his choice for second quarterback.
That too. Right. That's a good point.
I'm telling you, Cardinals fans forever will owe Matt Leinart for being so bad in that preseason game against Oakland. Completely changed the season.
Scope of the franchise.
Greatest Show on Grass returns to the TPC Scottsdale as the Waste Management Phoenix Open tees off on January 28th, goes through February 3rd. Head to the rewards page at arizonasports.com for your chance to win tickets to this year's Open. Coming up, a rousing rendition of Yay or Nay. Straight ahead, it's Bickley and Murata live from the Ak Chin Community Studios, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Time to take a look at the Arizona Sports Poll Question. Brought to you by Sanderson Ford. The best play is at Sanderson Ford.
Today's Sanderson Ford Poll Question on the front page of ArizonaSports.com. Which part of the upcoming offseason is more important for the Cardinals? Your choices, draft or free agency? I would pick a third option and just say yes. They're both very important. But if you had to pick between the two, what would you pick?
Free agency.
Free agency. Winning the vote right now. 56%, 44% for the draft. You can cash your vote. It is today's Sanderson Ford poll question on the front page of ArizonaSports.com.
Bickley and Murata. See or no? We or not? Yay or nay?
Jarrett Carlin. Oh, Jarrett Carlin. What do you have for
Where for art thou, Jarrett Carlin?
Yes.
I'll start with one that just popped up here. Jalen Hurts is transferring to Oklahoma.
I'm sorry he hurts.
Yes. Jalen.
Is he really?
I was just talking to an Oklahoma fan yesterday about that possibility.
Yeah. How about that?
Yeah.
So with the two starting quarterbacks in the championship game also returning next year, yay or nay, at least three of the four same teams will be in the playoffs next year.
Oh, yay.
Well, hold on. Notre Dame is not going to be there.
Alabama, Clemson, and Oklahoma.
And next year it'll be Georgia. It's their turn.
But the other three you think
will
be?
Yes. Yeah, I will agree with that. Yes.
It's Arizona State just on the outside.
They'll be the
I'll take that.
The Rose
there you
Bowl,
go. I like the Alabama, Clemson, Oklahoma, and ASU.
Sure.
Perfect.
Somebody out west finally. All right. A lot of talk about the future of Antonio Brown. Could he come to Arizona, maybe, and the future of Larry Fitzgerald. Will he return to Arizona? Yay or nay, when all is said and done, when both retire, Antonio Brown will be known as having a better career than Larry Fitzgerald.
Nay. No
way. I'm going to say the numbers might be up there, but I'm going to say nay as well.
Not just the numbers, but the playoffs. The numbers also.
The clutch performances.
People are going.
Well, no, but I'm saying for Antonio Brown, will have won more than Larry probably.
Yes, but it's really hard to shake that label that he is kind of bestowed upon himself or earned the reputation of having anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Larry Fitzgerald, on the other hand, has the least amount of diva of any receiver that's ever played the game.
And that's what completes this. That's what completes the cycle here. It's not just Antonio Brown and what he's done to his own legacy and his image, but you juxtapose that to Larry Fitzgerald, who is just off the charts in terms of being respected, doing things the right way. It doesn't matter how many rings Antonio Brown has compared to Fitz. Fitz will have had the better career.
I agree. Do you guys think that Aaron Rodgers, Aaron Rodgers is the best quarterback of this era?
Yay.
Yay.
Better than Tom Brady?
Yay.
Okay. Yay or nay, if Drew Brees wins his second Super Bowl this year, you will put him ahead of Rodgers and Brady of this era.
Nay. Drew Brees is really good at doing what he does, and that is throwing incredibly accurate passes on time. Aaron Rodgers gives you the whole package.
It's such a nuanced conversation, but I would say nay. His resume becomes better than Aaron Rodgers' resume. Nobody's resume matches up with Tom Brady's. But if I was picking a quarterback, I would pick Brady and Rodgers over Brees. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the difference between skill level and resume.
Yeah.
And that's what it boils down to for me for Drew Brees.
So your overall
Drew Brees always needs a really good team to be an elite quarterback. He doesn't lift a mediocre team up the way.
But you could say,
Aaron Rodgers
really didn't do that this year, and has failed to do it in the past.
Well, I would argue that he hasn't taken him to the Super Bowl and won Super Bowls, but he's lifted pretty mediocre teams.
Okay,
that's my opinion.
Okay.
All right. The Clemson National Championship football team was treated to a feast of, at best, lukewarm, probably cold fast food. Yay or nay, the best hot food that you can eat cold is pizza.
Nay, I hate cold pizza.
You and I are a complete alignment on that.
Hate it.
I cannot stand
I agree with
cold
you,
pizza.
Too, because the cheese gets hard and
congealed
like...
congealed and gross.
Right, so what is the answer?
I think one of the grossest things I see people do is they order pizza at night, and then they leave it out all night, and then they...
That's not a good idea.
Eat it for breakfast.
That's very proud
it's
of
disgusting.
People. Should not be doing that.
Yeah.
So what is... What is good?
What is a hot food that you could eat cold? Leftover Chinese food.
No.
It's all gross.
Burrito.
It's all gross cold.
Chocolate chip cookies, Jarrett.
When they cool off.
Yeah.
When they assume room
temperature.
They're
still better, though.
They're still pretty good. Yeah, I don't know if I have an answer to that one.
I can't think of anything that... Because I'm always want the cold pizza is something I'm just like, why do people like that?
Yeah, I can't
think of anything.
I don't even like room temperature food. I always like food that's hot. I think is way, way, way better.
And I'm like that
too.
I
don't like very hot food either.
See, I do. There are people.
I do too.
There are people who can go through a drive-thru and get food and drive 10 minutes home with it. I can't do that. I need to eat it.
I feel it's like it's a race with. In fact, I'll even like take out like a glass of water before I leave, so that when I get there, I can just start eating when I get home. Yeah, people eat cold spaghetti. Like,
ugh.
Dave Burns started off his show yesterday with this.
On this for Tuesday afternoon. On this for Tuesday afternoon.
Turned into a fruit
fun.
Tuesday.
Yeah,
that's what it turned into.
Right, so it turned into a fruit Tuesday, and they had a poll. They each said what their favorite fruit was, and they had a poll of which the great best fruit is. Yay or nay, the best, most delicious fruit is a peach.
No way.
Peach.
Nay.
What is the best fruit?
To me, it's not even close. I love cantaloupe.
Really?
You don't like cantaloupe?
I like it.
Oh my goodness.
As long as it's
good cantaloupe.
If it's cold and refreshing.
Now, you don't want the cantaloupe at an all-you-can-eat breakfast buffet, because then you got fruit flies flying all over it, and that's what you want to eat that cold. You want that cantaloupe cold.
Nay for me, and it's definitely a nay on cantaloupe.
Yeek. I like honeydew melon better than cantaloupe.
I love grapes. Love them.
That's
really?
Such a boring answer.
It is boring.
What? Red grape? Green grape or black purple grape?
I prefer red.
Oh, no.
Vinny was eating these things called artisan apples the other day. You know what they were called?
Opal apples.
Opal apples.
Yeah. I bought some more yesterday.
Have you ever had a lychee nut or lychee?
No.
Oh, yes.
Delicious.
I love that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Or a pomegranate?
Eh,
pain in the ass.
I'll take the lychee fruit, but not the pomegranate.
Oh, boy. What do we got here? Okay. Have you heard of... Well, I got a whole bunch left. We only have, like, time for one more. Have you heard of this new show that's sort of the sensation called Tidying Up with, I think, Marie Kondo is her name, or Mary Kondo?
No.
It's this lady. She goes into people's houses. She goes through their closets, their rooms, and declutterifies them, throws stuff out. Does this bring you joy, she says. If not, get rid of it. Yay or nay, there is something that you have too much of that you, I wouldn't say hoard, but you have clutter in one certain area that you probably need to get rid of.
One certain area?
What are some ones?
Every time I move, I discover that 90% of the crap that I pack up to move is just stuff that I move with me that I never use.
And I'm the exact opposite. Okay, I am such a minimalist, and I don't buy anything for myself. I live with a family of slobs. I have got clutter, and I can't stand it, Jared. It drives me insane.
Oh, right.
The one thing that I am, like, fastidious about is just I don't want stuff everywhere. I don't own stuff.
I'm like, my wife is kind of messy that way.
Pack radish?
Let's, like, leave stuff. We have a big island in our kitchen, and just we both kind of just leave stuff around. And so that whenever we have to, like, clean up, it's a whole day thing just instead of just keeping it. But you don't have anything, nothing old memorabilia, nothing from your years at the newspaper,
articles. Yeah, no, I do. I've got boxes and boxes of newspaper articles in my garage. I don't know what to do with them because it's my work history dating back to 1985.
But 1985!
But they're newspaper. What I'm saying is...
The Libyans!
What do I do with them? What do I do with them?
You got to take them to some place so they could digitize them. Put it on a mini disc or
And what am I going to do with that?
Well, then you'll still have it, but it'll take up this much room instead of a whole garage
full. So, but am I ever going to read them again? These are the questions I ask myself. It's like, what is the value of that?
Well, I mean, I'm the same. Like, I once collected DVDs. I have hundreds and hundreds of DVDs. And yes, they're all bad movies for anybody that asks.
Of course,
but they're just sitting in boxes. I don't even use a DVD player anymore. I've not popped one in forever. All right, that's yay or nay. We do it every Wednesday here on the show. Coming up, the Antonio Brown of the Cardinals question is still out there. One of his former coaches says he's not worth the trouble. We'll dive into that next. Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Excuse me. I'd like to say I'm really glad and proud to be here tonight.
If the number one wasn't important, why do they make big foam fingers?
Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
From afar, it's just too much miscommunication, too much diva. You know, I just don't. I've heard so many stories, and I like Antonio. He plays as hard as anybody on Sunday, and he practices hard. He's just got to make better decisions off the field, be on time, do some of those little things.
Bruce Arians, head coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, former Cardinals coach, on with the Adam Schefter podcast, talking about Antonio Brown. Too much miscommunication, too much diva. This is coming.
There's that word. You do not want to be called that word if you're a wide receiver.
No.
Two types.
And, yeah, I mean, it's out there. The perception's out there. The behavior certainly warrants that label. But, yeah, when somebody says it, and somebody who has a history with Antonio Brown. And he was drafted in 2010. Bruce Arians was the offensive. He was his first pro offensive coordinator in Pittsburgh. B.A. was asked that follow-up question. Is that the Antonio Brown that you drafted?
Was that the Antonio that you knew and drafted back in 2011 or whatever year it was?
He was hardest working. He and Emmanuel Sanders, boy, they went after it because Mike Thomas always telling two dogs, one bone. At that time, we had Mike Wallace, Hines Ward, and we had a pretty good room for one of them to get on the field. And by the end of the season, they were both winning for us to go to the Super Bowl.
So certainly a reputation or a change in the approach from Antonio Brown with the success. I mean, he was not a big name, came out of a small school at Central Michigan, was a sixth-round draft pick. He had 16 catches that first year before he became a bigger contributor the next year. But it begs the question because the news is still out there. He's probably not going to be in Pittsburgh next year. They've come to that conclusion that enough is enough. He'll move on. Even though he's on the wrong side of 30, he's still one of the best wide receivers in football. Does he make sense for the Arizona Cardinals? We had Trey Wingo on yesterday. He talked about that possible connection here on Bickley and Marotta.
I'm going to read to you the list of all the receivers in the history of the National Football League that have recorded six straight 100-catch seasons. Antonio Brown. That's the entire list.
Wow.
Okay? And in the way the league is going right now and the pass happy offense that clearly Arizona is thinking about with their hiring of Cliff Kingsbury, he would be an intriguing person to bring in. Look, AB has baggage, but you know how it is with coaches. They say it'll be different here.
Yes.
I can make it work here. And maybe they can. But I think at Pittsburgh, they've seen enough.
And that spurred me to ask the question to Trey Wingo and follow up to that yesterday. And outside of, and I'm speaking honestly here, outside of Randy Moss late in his career when he finally got to a functional franchise in New England,
he was
appreciated there. I think he appreciated them.
Yeah.
Outside of that, you don't see divas become non-divas when they move on to a different team.
No, that's it. And once you become a diva, how many have gone back to being not a diva? Antonio Brown, if you listen to Bruce Arians talk about him, used to be just a great, and I remember Antonio Brown when he came in the league, hardworking kid. The stories about him after practice, very similar to Larry Fitzgerald, who used to catch 100, 150 catch or footballs through a jugs machine after practice, always worked at it. Now, Antonio Brown has become a diva, and it's I find the psychology of the wide receiver position absolutely fascinating because wide receivers, the divas will always believe they're open even when they're not. And then they have these arguments with quarterbacks in the huddle. Man, I'm open, I'm open. And the quarterback's thinking, no, you're not. I'm going through my progressions. I can see clearly you're not open. That's one thing. You get wide receivers when they become divas, they demand the ball. And if they don't get the ball a requisite amount of times on the sideline, they start throwing demonstrative fits. Keyshawn Johnson is one. Antonio Brown's another. It happens a lot.
Unless you're, in fact, demonstrative fists, then you don't throw any tantrums.
There you go.
Even when you don't get the ball.
Now, but you both look at me. Okay. In the case of this, all right, I see Larry Fitzgerald. There are times when Fitz isn't being used, and you can see him on the side, but it would never come out of him. You know, you can tell he's feeling it, but it wouldn't come out of him.
Oh, so you mean like any moment of the 2018 season? Is that what you're talking? Oh, I violated my rule.
Well done.
Kind of.
Part of the reason is wide receivers don't get hit that often. At least the ones that don't go over the middle. And so it's easy to say, get me the ball, get me the ball, get me the ball. Every running back in the National Football League wants the ball, but they know it hurts. So they're not like that. You don't get running backs saying, give me the darn ball. You get wide receivers to do that.
True. And there's not another position that's more reliant on others in football than the wide receiver.
Right. Exactly.
and they don't seem to understand that in a lot of cases.
So can Antonio Brown dial it back? I am of the belief, because I saw this with Dennis Rodman, that you can take the worst actor, the worst malcontent, the guy that likes to stir the pot just because he's that guy, because he's a negative guy. You put him in a room full of really decorated, highly respected people, and it gets him in line a little bit. If you've got Larry Fitzgerald back, he won't have to mentor Antonio Brown, but he will keep Antonio Brown in line. You're not going to be a, because everybody loves Fitz. And if you go into Fitz's locker room and act the fool, you're going to look like an idiot in every NFL market. And nobody wants that.
There's also this thought, the team that seems to be the most prevalent in all of these talks, and when you hear Jerry Rice go on a radio station in San Francisco and say, oh, Antonio Brown wants to get to the 49ers bad. There's this local thought anyway, well, the Cardinals should get him just to avoid San Francisco from getting him. You don't want to deal with that guy twice a year. You can't worry about that. If it's the right fit for you, if you can come up with a package that is attractive enough to Pittsburgh to deal him to the Cardinals, you do it. I find when the Cardinals were good, they didn't have a lot of diva or attitude on the team.
Mm-hmm.
They're not a good team right now, and they still don't have a lot of diva or attitude. It just seems like it's almost a diva-free zone here.
Depends how you feel about Patrick Peterson.
Difficulty, certainly, but what he has done doesn't measure up at all to what we've seen from Antonio Brown. I mean, the Cardinals never got to the circumstance where they said, all right, enough's enough. This guy's a great player, but we can't deal with this anymore.
Yeah.
They're not even close to that.
Yeah.
In fact, they made a coaching change probably in part to appease him.
Yeah.
It just seems like the Cardinals don't subscribe to that taking on difficult players mentality. So I think that's what makes it a weird fit for me.
It would be, to me, it would be the boldest move that Steve Keim ever made. And he's made some good ones. Carson Palmer, Chandler Jones, you can rattle off a list of big-time moves. Mm-hmm. But this one, the cost, what you would have to give up, what it would do. I mean, Antonio Brown's in the prime of his career with statistics that nobody else has matched. And he has had some crazy, crazy games in his stay in Pittsburgh. Look, I'm at the point now where they've got to be really cutthroat about talent. I'd give it a shot. And you know how much I detest the guy.
More so than his quarterback?
No.
I just
wanted to clear that up.
No. This also does change. Let's suppose they can move that number one pick, and all of a sudden you acquire a handful of other high picks.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have more currency, more inventory to move and still keep some stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And later on, I'm gonna lay on you why this whole Kyler Murray story is really gonna be a fulcrum for the Cardinals in all of this.
Join Burns and Gambo tomorrow as they broadcast live from the 48th annual Barrett Jackson Collector Car Auction at Westworld of Scottsdale. You can check out more than 1,700 rare and exotic cars up for auction, eat and drink from 40-plus vendors on site, and much, much more. Head to the events page at arizonasports.com for details and info on tickets. Coming up, high noon, Bickley Blast Time. It's Bickley and Marotta live from the Auction Community Studios, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Burns and Gambo.
It's not going to be Dennis Smith Jr., but are the Suns still looking for a veteran point guard? We'll ask the Suns' interim GM, James Jones, when he joins us at 3 o'clock.
Burns and Gambo, afternoons, 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
Dan Bickley here, and if you're looking to buy a car, you know what you don't want. You do not want to settle. You want to get behind the wheel of an impact statement. That's why Chapman BMW gives you the best of both worlds. You get the ultimate driving machine, and you get a locally owned dealership that's been a pillar of our community since 1966. Now, I've spent a lot of time at their two locations, one on Camelback Road in Phoenix, one in Chandler. You are not going to find better people or a better buying experience. I promise you that. But you're going to find a very pleasant surprise, and that's because BMW also stands for legendary performance for less than you think. A station employee of ours just purchased a 320i xDrive, and she cannot believe how affordable the payment is. She's paying $30 more per month than she was for her previous car, which doesn't even belong on the same road as a BMW. You're also going to find unreal deals on the remaining 2018s, like $20,000 off select models, 1.49% financing on select 2018 demos, or how about leasing an X1 or an X2 series for just $299 per month. You're also going to find exceptional offers through BMW Financial Services. And I'm telling you from experience, once you test drive one of their vehicles, your perspective is going to change forever. There's nothing like the thrill of driving a perfectly engineered car, so stylish on the outside, so smart on the inside, so luxurious. My son says it feels like he's flying in Air Force One, and that's what you get from Chapman BMW. So visit Chapman BMW Camelback or Chapman BMW in Chandler. Visit them online at chapmanbmw.com. Two great locations, one great experience.